This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. More than 67% of all housing in Ohio was built before 1980 and is likely to have some lead-based paint, either in interior or exterior surfaces, according to the Ohio Department of Health. The state health department requires children have their blood tested for lead if they're enrolled in Medicaid or if they live in a high-risk zip code. And under current state guidelines, most of Hamilton County is considered high risk. But fewer Ohio children have been getting tested for lead since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and that has local researchers worried. Joining me now to discuss that issue and what local and state health officials are doing to reduce families' lead exposures are Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Pediatric Environmental Health and Lead Clinic Director, Dr. Nick Newman. Welcome, Dr. Newman.
Thank you very much.
Cincinnati Health Department Assistant Health Commissioner and Division Director of Community Health and Environmental Health Services, Dr. Maurice Amin. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hamilton County Public Health Waste Management Director, Chuck DeYonkers. Welcome, Chuck.
Thank you.
And People Working Cooperatively Senior Project Manager, Aaron Grant. Thanks for being here, Aaron.
Thanks very much for having us.
You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Let's first talk about this problem and just how widespread it is. Dr. Amin, let's start within the city of Cincinnati. Talk to us about this problem of lead in paint or soil in the city. How big a problem is this?
Sure. So we have about over 200 children who are lead poisoned each year, which means that they have a blood lead level of 5 micrograms per deciliter or above. And that's really based on the number of kids that are getting tested. So another thing is that we should have 100% of kids getting tested, but that's not what's happening. It's about 30 to 40% of kids that are getting tested. So that screening component is really important. But after that, we have about 3% of those kids that are actually impacted by lead poisoning within the city.
Mm. And how about within Hamilton County Public Health's purview? What kind of numbers are you all seeing, Chuck?
In the lower level, poisonings of 5 to 9 deciliter or micrograms per deciliter in blood, we have about 171 over the last 5 years, so about 35 a year. And then the higher level, the 10 plus cases, we have about 73 over that 5 years, so about 12 to 14 per year.
Mm. And Dr. Newman, talk to us about why this is so dangerous for children. What risks does lead exposure pose?
So the reason that we're concerned about lead is that lead is toxic to all different organs of the body, but in children, we're most concerned about how it affects the developing brain. And since children, during the first few years of life, their brains are growing quickly and also making connections quickly, that it's extremely important to make sure that they're living somewhere that isn't interfering with all that. And what we've seen in research that's been done is more likely for children to have, as they grow up, if they've been exposed to lead, to have symptoms like ADHD or to have problems with speech, language, learning.
Mm. Are there behavioral problems, too, that kids can experience if they've been exposed to lead?
Yeah, so problems of focusing or perhaps with controlling their own like impulses as they get older. And I guess what I would stress is that, you know, lead isn't the only thing that causes this. It's a risk factor, but it's one that we can reduce because we can, you know, we know what it is and we know what it's doing.
Mm. And Dr. Newman, you and I talked a couple weeks ago in planning this conversation. We talked about how the Ohio Department of Health requires children get tested at ages 1 and 2 for lead in their blood if they're insured through Medicaid or live in a high-risk zip code. What trends have you been seeing in terms of the numbers of kids getting tested, especially since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, so during the COVID-19 pandemic, we've observed a drop-off in all, preventive care for children, so vaccines and checkups. And if you look at the most recent data from the Ohio Department of Health, it looks like we're running probably like 10% below where we were pre-pandemic. Obviously, during 2020, there was a huge drop, but it looks like we haven't like completely recovered. And I guess one of my concerns is like, who have we missed? Have we missed the highest risk kids or not? And just having been in practice for over 20 years, I feel like it's often the people who need the services the most are the ones who miss them.
Aaron, I want to get to some more encouraging news for people who are listening to this. The city, county, and state all have programs aimed at helping people reduce lead in their homes. And I know PwC is the gateway for a lot of those programs, people working cooperatively. Talk to us about those programs and how they're designed to help families.
So, there is a little bit of good news here in that we do have multiple programs that can serve families in Southwest Ohio to identify lead paint in the home environment and to address it if it's found. The great thing about that is that we're working with our local partners, many of whom are represented here today, to make sure those programs work well for families. Lead is really a housing problem. It's a health issue. Clearly, lead poisoning prevention is a complex issue, but housing is really the key intervention place where we can have an impact on whether or not a child is exposed to lead. So the programs for people who are eligible, and again, these are targeted mostly at low-income families that live in homes built before 1978 where a child spends time. They do not have to have demonstrated an elevated blood lead level to be eligible. We want this to be a prevention program as well. What we can do is go into the home and inspect it with our licensed inspectors and see where lead paint exists, where hazards may exist, and identify a strategy for abating them in those homes. And when we're all done, we can even do an exam to make sure that it's safe to reoccupy so that by the time we're done, we've created a new unit of lead-safe housing.
We're talking about the dangers of lead for children and how state and local health officials are working to help families reduce lead exposure. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Amin, are there enough resources to address the scope of the problem there? You know, Cincinnati's got a lot of old housing stock. Hamilton County has a lot of old housing stock. That's a lot of places to try to inspect and make sure they're safe for kids and families.
Sure. And what Aaron was talking about, the city and the county both have funding to help those low-income housing. And that's about 200 units in 3 years that we are able to help families. So it's certainly not enough, and certainly more funding would be great. But it is a great resource to help families that both have a child that has an elevated blood lead level and those where children live and try to prevent risk of happening.
Chuck, do you find families are aware of this? I mean, is there awareness that these programs are out there and available to help people?
Well, we hope so, for sure. And programs like this help get that word out. So we're happy to participate in this and get that word out. No, I think lead creeps up on people. I think they find out that lead is a hazard when they find out that their child has already been poisoned. So already kind of behind the ball on this, and proactive is where we've always wanted to be. And having these grants available will help get us there because we can get the word out. We can get testing of the home done before we're using the child as kind of the canary in the coal mine.
So, Dr. Newman, you had mentioned to me when we talked earlier that Ohio has dedicated some more resources to this. House Bill 45, Pat signed into law, appropriated $150 million in fiscal year 2023 to lead prevention and mitigation. At least $20 million of that, I'm told by the Ohio Department of Development, in coordination with the Department of Health, is going to be to distribute funding to lead poisoning prevention programs in the state. The rest will also go to training folks in this, workforce development, recruitment, retention of lead contractors. Where does that put Ohio, Dr. Newman, in terms of that additional investment? Do you think, is Ohio doing a lot compared to what other states are doing in this regard?
Yeah, with regards to this particular program, for sure, like Ohio's doing, it has really kind of moved, basically taken their game up quite a lot. And as someone who is concerned about children's health, I think this is a huge step forward. And if you think about what some of the funding, even from the federal level, to get stuff done, I mean, this really makes a huge investment in Ohio itself that Ohio is making in itself to try to improve this problem, because we're basically number three in terms of the number of lead poisoned children. And we have millions of homes that probably need to be fixed. So, not that we need a bottomless pit of money, but we need to get, we need to get the money to the right places and where the most highest, you know, the highest risk people are.
And Aaron, how proactive is this? I mean, you know, Dr. Newman is seeing kids who already maybe have problems. I don't think anybody wants to use kids as the canary in the coal mine to find out something's wrong. How much proactive work can happen to fix this before it becomes a problem for kids and families?
Well, that's critical because grant programs, like we've talked about, are really important, but they can only have a limited impact, right? And so we know that because it is such a complex issue, we need people treating it at the clinical level like Dr. Newman. We need people diagnosing it. We need people getting the word out like our public health authorities here to give people the awareness on how everybody can stay safe and know what the risks are. And we need housing agencies from the federal level all the way down to local community groups like PwC to be making that a key part of their message on housing, and that housing is a really important place to have an impact on health in general, but specifically lead poisoning. So, for example, if more families, whether they're participating in a grant program or not, if they know that every time that they do a home renovation in an old house that they could be exposing their family if they're not careful, those are really important community awareness messages that we need to get out there so that all of us have a responsibility in helping each of us stay safe in our own homes.
And is that standard practice in terms of when you're doing a renovation or even a home inspection? Is lead one of those things that a home inspector typically looks for?
It really isn't. And we would love to see that a more regular part of the process, especially, you know, when a home is being sold or transferred. That's a great opportunity to really assess the home environment and see, interestingly, what most people do is just assume it's present. We've all seen, our landlords have all given us these little EPA pamphlets that say we know it may be present. And really what we'd love to see is people taking a proactive stance and investigating whether or not these hazards exist in all kinds of housing so that we have a chance to really address the problem before it becomes a health issue. Mm.
Dr. Amin, I think it's important to point out that this, I know I've done reporting in the past about how the city has opportunities for people who operate home-based childcare centers to get help with this, too. I mean, this isn't just for homes where kids live all the time. This is important for homes that are used for that purpose, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Any environment where, you know, a child resides, whether it's permanent or temporary, is definitely a place to look, and we're looking at different opportunities that could help that environment.
Yeah. So, Dr. Newman, we've talked about how no level of lead is safe. I mean, both Dr. Amin and Chuck have talked to us about children who have been diagnosed as having lead poisoning because of the amount of lead in their bloodstream. But talk to us just about how even less lead than that, what kind of danger that can pose for children.
I think one of the things that's like somewhat hard to wrap your head around is just how like these small amounts, you know, people say, well, it's just such a small amount of lead. But, you know, as a doctor, we give people very small amounts of other chemicals, which have like an actual like therapeutic effect that we know about. And, you know, the research that's been done like here in Cincinnati Children's and at UC, really like put the idea of like no amount of lead is okay on the map. And we found that by looking not just, you know, at the children at the time, but to follow them for decades and to see like how did they turn out as adults. And we understand that lead is not the only thing going on, but that once again, it's something that's important that can be prevented. And I guess the other thing that makes it important is that we do not have any evidence to show, meaning like we can't see that lead, the effect of lead is reversible. So that's why prevention from the start is the most important thing. And, you know, if you were to go back and find like people who, you know, from 15,000 years ago or something, when they, you know, archaeology, like they dig up bones and stuff, you know, we have like way more lead in our system now than they did back then. And so like really like lead is, you know, kind of new in terms of, you know, it's the last few thousand years, which seems like a lot for us. But like in terms of like, you know, human beings, that's really not that long a period of time. Hmm.
We do have a caller on the line. Zach, thank you so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Yeah, I was wondering if families who have children that spend time in other family members' homes, if other family members can take advantage of the testing program.
That's a great question.
Such as if a grandparent or like an aunt and uncle take care of the children, but they don't live there.
Great question. How about that, Aaron?
Yeah, in many cases they can be. So most of the grant programs that we have, children need to spend a certain amount of time per week, usually 8 hours per week in the home. So for example, at PwC, a number of our clients are seniors, so they're grandparents perhaps that are babysitting kids during the week, or they spend a couple days there during the weekend. Those families could be eligible for this program. So it's really the environments where children spend time.
Great. Thank you for that important question, Zach. We appreciate it. Chuck and Dr. Amin, I don't know if I'll start with you, Chuck. How long does it take to remediate this problem? If a family's worried, they think, oh, they found out, oh my gosh, my child has lead exposure. We really want to get this in here and get this problem fixed. What's that process like?
Well, these are, the HUD grant is a federal grant, so there's a lot of red tape, of course. Lots of review that has to be conducted. The first step is to do the environmental sampling, go in with a meter and measure the amount of lead in the painted surfaces, do dust sampling, soil sampling, and we determine where the lead is. And then we approach that with how can we eliminate this from this house, from this child's future. And so we'll write up a spec. And then there's an environmental review that has to be conducted, a historical review, meet with contractors, go through a bidding process. All in all, it takes probably 3+ months. So 90 days of work goes into each project for us.
Dr. Amin, I imagine there must be a little bit of frustration in that when you know that there's a dangerous level of lead in the house. You're trying to get it done as quickly as possible. Is there anything that families can do to kind of speed that along, or is it just sort of the nature of the beast with the grant programs and the hoops folks have to jump through?
Yeah, I think as Chuck mentioned, it's a process, you know, that we have to follow the guidelines and make sure that everything is done correctly. But there are lead-approved contractors that are working within the home. So, you know, we try to make sure that it's the best environment and the best resources for the family so that we do have a lead-safe home.
Yeah. And Dr. Newman, what's your advice to the parents of your patients? I've got to imagine that when a parent comes in, they know that something's not quite right with their child. They find out about this lead. You have to tell them, hey, there's not a pill we can give your child to get rid of this lead in their body, or, you know, what do you advise the parents? How they've got to be working with dealing with a lot of guilt about this.
Yeah, I definitely encounter that a lot. And so, you know, what I try to do is to look at it just like any other illness that occurs and say, okay, well, this has happened, but we know that there's a bunch of things that we can now do. And so I see my job is to try to help the families work their way through that. And if there is something that has to be medically managed, I'm also here to do that. And I think also a lot of families, as Chuck said, this kind of hits them out of the blue. And I think, you know, making sure that, you know, if that your home is well maintained, that if there are questions about things, you know, paint or leaks or something, that they be addressed, because that's how a lot of kids are finding their way being exposed to lead. And there's actually some fairly simple things we can do to kind of hold that off. But I advise families to, you know, do the things that we know that help improve like your neurodevelopment. So reading to your child, making sure they have a good diet, they have a stimulating environment, that people are caring for them, meaning that, you know, they're looking to try to, you know, teach the children things. Mm-hmm. And is that, you know, stimulating your brain is good for you regardless, and probably even more important if you're exposed to something toxic like lead.
Yeah. And how bad can this get? I mean, you've been in this practice a long time. You know, you've said even a little bit of lead is bad, but how bad can this get for children?
So, I mean, not to be Dr. Gloom, but I mean, like, you know, the first child I ever saw with lead poisoning back during my training back in Detroit was a girl whose mom brought her in because she couldn't walk or talk anymore. Mm. And that would be an example of like an extreme case of lead poisoning. And, you know, that is pretty scary. And my, you know, experience over the years has been that the kids who are exposed to these extremely high amounts of lead, like, they're never quite the same as their siblings, and we don't want to see that happen. And that's what we're all, like, here to try to do, is to prevent bad things like that from happening.
Yeah. Aaron, I'm going to give you an opportunity to give out the phone number people can call for to PWC if they live in Cincinnati or Hamilton County, they think, they worry that they're in an older house. What's the number people should call?
So people can call 513-366-4697, and that's both for the city grant program, the Hamilton County grant program, and also the state Department of Health grant, which we're helping administer also in Butler, Warren, and Claremont County, so kind of the greater Cincinnati in Ohio area. And I might just add that we're just so privileged to be working with these folks to try to help address this need in low-income families.
Yeah. I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Pediatric Environmental Health and Lead Clinic Director, Dr. Nick Newman, Cincinnati Health Department Assistant Health Commissioner and Division Director of Community Health and Environmental Health Services, Dr. Maurice Amin, Hamilton County Public Health Waste Management Director, Chuck DeYonkers, and People Working Cooperatively, Senior Project Manager, Aaron Grant. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.